keeping score. I am 0 for 2. But I do have a passion about coming and speaking anywhere that they will let me. You know, DA decided, hey, let's take this guy. He's from Louisiana. He speaks with a heavy accent. He stutters, and he can make a grammar teacher cry. But let's take that guy, and let's go let him represent DA as in somebody who was into demand reduction. But as we stand here tonight before you, I have asked to speak on security. And what do we do in these situations that are just absolutely impossible from a law enforcement perspective? We're going to talk about that tonight, and I'm going to make some comments. But first, before I was a deputy, before I was a federal agent, I spent 8 years as a deputy sheriff in St. Tammany Parish, and I was on their tactical team. So I do have a little bit of experience in building security and what to do in situations of mass shootings or that type. I've attended several schools dealing with how to treat casualties during these events, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that as well. If we get through with all of those things, what I really love to talk about and my passion is talking about dope. My absolute passion is to be able to come before Christian audiences and other audience and talk about dope. Talk about why we have such a drug problem here in the United States, why we have a consumption problem, why in the world is it that we can walk out this door and we can drive within about a mile or so and many of us can go out there and buy drugs. And it's an absolute travesty to me of what drugs have done to our families. And I look forward to the opportunity, if I'm invited back, and I wear a tie, that we will be able to present that, okay, in a way. I'm also passionate about a lesson that comes from my own family, and I've developed a Christian relationship to those around us, and certainly within our family, who have developed a drug problem. And what should our response to these individuals be? How do we react to those in our family? How am I supposed to love my sister when her drug problem is absolutely devastating my mother? How am I supposed to, as a Christian, I'm drawn between, I love them, and I really want to be there, I want to help them, but then I've got this other issue in my family, and so do you. Statistically speaking, I'm off topic here, I'll get right back on it. Statistically speaking, is that each and every one of us, if we go out, one family member has somebody who is addicted to drugs, and it is negatively impacting our five family dynamics. Because how hard is it for us to be loving people? We're going to talk about that in my lesson, that we love people. And the Bible says, Tim, you'll love your brothers and love your sisters and love your family, and yet they're doing these really bad things. And from my own life, I had to search the scriptures. And I had to learn how to deal with that. And that's a lesson, again, in this series that I hope to, time permitting tonight, maybe talk a little bit. We're going to start our lesson tonight. We're going to start it in Genesis 6:5. I even marked it. And it goes like this. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. From the very, very beginning, evil existed. From the very, very beginning and through today, unfortunately, we are faced with evil. Oh, how I wish that was not true. But it is. There's evil out there every single day. And in our workplaces, In our lives, we are confronted with it. As a policeman, I am telling you that I have seen some evil, and in your own lives, you have too, because sometimes that evil can be within our own family or within the ones in which we love. And sometimes the evil is from the outside, and it brings in. Sometimes Christians are the direct, or at least Christians, because of my love for Christ, sometimes I can be a target of co-workers. I can be a target. I can be ridiculed. We all can. We all have been. So just open up the TV and we see it. Solomon said that there's nothing new under the sun. And there isn't. What we're going through today and what we see today in the world relative to evil, there was evil from the very beginning. We talked about it in Genesis. But after that, how about the story of Ahab and Jezebel? For those of you that may not be familiar with the story, it's Jezebel that... I was over there practicing saying his name. Nohab. Did I say it right? Did I mess it up? So don't be afraid to correct me. Everybody, you know, biblical names, I Google it, and then I hit play, and I practice saying them, and then I get up here and I mess it up every single time, okay? But Ahab goes to let me slow up a little bit. I'm too excited, too nervous. Goes to Jezebel, and he wants a vineyard. And she basically tells him, grow up. Right? You can't take care of it. I'll take care of it. So she writes a letter, and there's a feast, and she directs the individuals at this feast to have two or more witnesses against them so that they will take him out and kill him. And then he can take over the vineyard. Recently, I won't talk politics, but recently we had a Supreme Court nominee. And when I read that story, I couldn't help but to see the contrast or the similarities between the two stories. They were false. They were accusations that could not be proven, although in the vineyard story, she made up accusations to get what she wanted. Nothing's new under the sun. There is nothing new under the sun. Our grandparents, our great-great-grandparents, our great-great-grand-grandparents, all struggled with the same things we are struggling with. In that regard, there is evil out there, and we have to know what to do about it. In a real way, not so much what to do about it, but tonight's main focus is, what do we do in that terrible situation? Well, number one, we have to recognize that there is evil. Sorry, we just do. And I said it earlier, I wish it wasn't true, but it is. There are people who do not do well mentally. And some of these people who are really struggling reach out and try to hurt others. And sometimes because of their beliefs, they may try to hurt Christians, or they may try to hurt Americans. And we know this because this example after example. But here's what I want you to know is that the chances are very, very slim. We still live in a safe world. The United States is a very, very safe place to live. But I was asked to talk, and I'm so glad to do it, that in a real way, what do we do in those critical moments when things are really, really going bad? And what I'm talking about here, and what I'm going to be talking about for the next few minutes, is what do we do if there's an active shooter in the building or in the place in which we are? I've been asked, do we duck? Do we hide? Do we run? Do we fight? Do we pray? What do we do? Isn't that a conversation that's kind of hard to have? When I was growing up, I remember like it was 50 years ago. Remember how many of you guys remember getting up on the, How many of you guys remember getting under your desk? Yeah. Remember that? Ain't that something? As if getting under your desk is going to help you in a nuclear war, right? Get under your desk. Okay. I didn't know any better. I got under my desk. Okay. I heard the bell. I jumped up. I was under my, I was one of the first ones because I was chicken boy. I got up under my desk somehow thinking that that would save us. But in an active shooter scenario, whether it be you're at the mall or whether you're in your place of worship or whether you are at some other function at a ball game or something like that, the first thing that you should always be aware of is where are the exits. That's number one. It is okay every now and then to think about, now if the building was on fire or something was going wrong, where are my exits? Where should I go? Oftentimes, if it's in the case of a fire, there's not going to be any light. You live in an environment in which you can expect the police to be here in about 3 minutes. It's about 3 minutes of critical time. In that 3 minutes, you have to make a lot of very, very, very important decisions relative to what are you going to do. When I was speaking to you elders about this lesson, it's my understanding that there are some individuals who attend church here who are normally armed. My elders have came to me and asked me about how I feel about wearing my firearm into church, and my first response was, I don't wear my firearm to church because I was afraid there are those who attend who may not be comfortable with the sight of a firearm. There are people who are scared of firearms. And I didn't want to be that guy that they would see and say, oh, you know, he doesn't even feel good enough about coming to church, he has to wear a firearm. My elder spoke to me about that, and he said, well, we would feel better as the eldership if you would carry a firearm. We just feel like that is we are there now in this century. We are here now where because of those types of things that are going on in our society. Because of that, we had to have a conversation of if there is something that goes on in that church, I'm going to be the one that's going to the back. I'm going to be the one engaging the shooter. You have those individuals among you who worship among you who I understand the elders are either going to or already have had a conversation. First thing you have to understand is that if things are happening like that, they're all going to be those individuals who are going towards the shooter. Some of you are in shape. Some of you have the ability to go after or to go towards a shooter. Some of you do not. Some of you have military training. Some of you do not. That's why I cannot, before you, come up with a plan that is going to suit each and every scenario. So we have to look at general. We have to look at what can we do, what can our game plan be, and what are the general things in which we can do to keep each other safe. In researching this topic, it is very, very it doesn't take an expert, and I don't claim to be an expert in this field. I'm not checking my emails or all my fantasy sports. I'm trying to see the... I want to get the terminology right. I highlighted it, and then when I nod it, I'm pulling it up. I don't have the right terminology. Just give me 1 second, and I'll be right back. There it is. Common the common denominator in what to do is run, hide, fight. That's the three things that I think that every law enforcement officer will tell you in that scenario. Okay? If you're an average citizen, it's run, hide, fight. Somebody might say, well, playing dead. Yeah, playing dead is kind of a tough one. Although we have had some shootings when people have played dead and the shooter, some shooter comes back through. Sometimes they do not. I'm not going to tell you right or wrong. Okay? It's not for me to tell you that because every scenario would be different. But the three things that I want you to take away from tonight's lesson in your own mind is to first understand that if something really bad is happening, you're going to see people that are going towards the shooter. And if you can help, if you're strong, if you're not afraid of a physical confrontation, understanding that you are running to the very place that is going to be extremely dangerous, all of those things are fully understood. Fight is the last. If you're going to run, what they're talking about is getting up and going to an exit. Finding the exits and getting out of there. But there's some problems with that too. Let's say you have an active shooter and you don't know if he's in a building or not. You don't know. You hear it. You know it's going on. You don't know if it's in the classrooms. You don't know if it's in the main auditorium. You don't know if it's left down the hall or right down the hall. So running, you got to have a place that you're running to that you believe is safe. In my church, we have our elder sits by the glass door. And this idea of security, one of his many, many jobs is, you know, just to look at the parking lot. Nobody's doing surveillance. But to look at the parking lot, and if he sees something that doesn't make sense, he's to lock the door. Now, that's not going to be a big deal, because if it is somebody who wants to hurt somebody, he's going to walk up the door and pull on it, believe it or not. Gives us a few extra seconds. But eventually, this guy is going to most likely get in. Now, we do lock our side doors. That way, we only have one exit for getting in. But that means you only get one exit for getting out, too. I see that these doors have the bars on them, so they are true emergency exits. So if you're going to run, and you feel like you have a safe place to run to, then the idea would be to get as low as you can, crawl as fast as you can, and get to safety as fast as you can. If you decide to hide, run, hide, fight. You seeing some people, going towards the back, you're not exactly sure where you're going to run to. You really don't know whether it's safe that way or whether it's safe that way. You may not know where this individual is. He may not have a gun. He may not have a gun at all. You know that the people who are involved, you see some people going towards it. You know that there are some people out there who are Davids. You know that there are some people who are going to have the ability. It's going to be those. And they're going to go. And you know that is going on at the same time because you see this is going on. You may want to hide. You may want to find up under the pews, or you may want to find a place to hide, knowing that it's only about 2 or 3 minutes before I started telling you this. I talked to a police officer who works right here on my way up here so I could be better informed. And I asked him, what is your policy when you're coming to an active shooter? Remember in Broward County, the policeman, he got ridiculed. He's standing outside of the active shooter inside the school. He didn't go in. I don't know that we should have ridiculed him. If it was me, I'm going in. But you know, there is a time in which we have to understand our own abilities. In our Christian walk, sometimes we have to know our own abilities. If I have a problem with alcohol in my Christian walk, can I use that as an excuse to go in a barroom? Probably not. I probably need to send somebody else in that barroom to talk with a brother or to talk with a sister. I may not be strong enough. I just may not be strong enough. My pastor often says that he could fall asleep at nighttime in a place that serves alcohol, and he'd probably die of thirst. And you got to know, it's just not something he cares about doing. Not sure. Some of us may struggle with that. My point with that is that we have to know, not only in our Christian walk, but in our physical walk and in our life, we have to know what our limitations are. Maybe hard for you guys to believe, but I have trouble running a 6-minute mile now. I can say 6 minutes because I can't run a 12-minute. I can't run an 18-minute mile, so a 6-minute mile would certainly be a struggle, right? My point being is that we know if there was something to happen, I know my limitations. As a Christian, I have to constantly guard my life as well. I got to know my limitations. I'm on fire for Christ. I want to talk about Christ. I want to talk about my relationship with Christ. But in tactical situations, the last thing that we want to do as a police officer is be part of that or any of it. We don't want to cause more problems. So we talked about running, hiding. Last one is fighting. There's a story that just makes me cry because it didn't end well. The story of the jetliner that was headed toward the Pentagon. Some people say White House. I don't know that they ever quite figured out exactly where the plane was headed. But you had some people on that train, and in that scenario, they decided that they would fight. And they actually won the fight in the cabin, but they couldn't breach into the cockpit, as I understand it. Fighting has got to be a very, very personal decision that I cannot make for you. But I do suggest you think about it a little bit in your life as to what would you do. I think a little bit about my kids, and I think a lot about them because they aggravate the tar out of me. But I think about the idea of if I'm in a mall, or if I'm out somewhere, or if I'm, you know, I've done undercover work. You know, I got pulled out of a car one time and got my brain, I don't want to over-exaggerate, I got beat up pretty good. I think about what's going to happen when things go wrong. I think about that. I think about from time, not every day, but I think about things, about how am I going to react if this happens? How am I going to react if that happens? In my own home, I'm thinking, okay, you know, if it's on fire, which kid do I, you know, which kid do I get? I don't think about that. I think about which bedroom's closest, which one to go to. Kind of an escape plan. And I think that that's an important thing. It's an important thing to do. There is a thing called a survivor mindset. And I think about that mindset sometimes in my Christian walk as well, is that I've had to ask myself on several occasions, do you have a Christian mindset, Tim? Oh, you got a survivor mindset. Two officers, one guy shot in the arm, as I understand it, the elbow. He didn't make it. Another policeman shot, I think the number's five times, should not have made it. They looked at each of the studies and he found out that the fellow who shot five times, he had what the textbooks call a survivor mindset. A mindset of, I don't care what's going to happen to me, I'm going to follow through and I'm going to make it to my target, I'm going to live. It's a mindset. Christians ought to have that mindset more. We ought to have a better understanding of that because we sing a song that says it is well with our soul. It is well with my soul. I got a couple grandkids. I want to see them old. I want to lead them to Christ. I want to baptize them. I want to see them. I want so much for them. But I'm also secure in my faith that it is all well. And this isn't about me. A Christian mindset is that it is all well with our soul. So we can act. What's harder? And this is actually a question. It's kind of rhetorical, but I'm being serious. What's harder, approaching a friend about Christ and taking on a gun? What's harder? One's easy. One of those scenarios is super, super easy because it's now. Do something now or else. The other one, approaching somebody about Christ, that's a little harder. It's a little harder for us to do. Survivor mindset. In those scenarios, it's the survivor mindset that wins the award. How many of you guys have a military background? I'll show you hands. Okay. How many of you guys have been through any of the specialty courses? The Marines, SEALs, the SEALs camp, or any of those. Anybody? Okay. They have a bell. This bell is a shiny bell. They keep it up around the little park, as I understand it. I've never been there. They got some nice seats. Usually a moist wind blowing there. I mean, it is just it's a place of peace. And as they're beating you up in the Marines and they're just tearing you up, you're looking out the corner of the eye and you're seeing that place of peace over there. And all you got to do is go over there and ring the bell. And if you ring the bell, all of that goes away. You get to go home. And you're up to here in mud. You're swimming in cold water, you're swimming with sharks, you're doing all of these things that only the brave and the strongest can do. And there's a beautiful bell that's got a little park, and all you got to do is ring the bell. And they don't make fun of you anymore. They don't call you a bunch of names. But don't ring the bell. Don't ring the bell. Don't give up. And our Christian walk is the exact same way. Don't ring that bell. Don't give up. Paul said it. Right? Paul, he gave example. I fought the fight. I fight the fight. I fought the fight. My crown awaits. Run, hide, or fight. I can't make that decision for you. But that is the decisions. All three of them in which we have. Our Christian walk is no different. Are we going to run? Do we hide? Or do we fight? How many of us do a little bit of all three of them? Guilty. No different. Tactically, from the background of somebody who is a police officer. I see a lot of similarities between that. But tonight's lesson, what the elders wanted me to talk on was really building security, or the security of mind when those things around us are going really wrong, and I'm really talking about an active shooter. And I think that I spoke with an elder about my lesson to make sure that I wasn't going to say anything that the eldership would disagree with or really not want it as part of the overall plan. It's their plan. Run, hide, or shoot. Run, hide, or fight. I'm going to challenge you tonight in our Christian walk to do the same thing. Are we going to run? Are we going to hide? Or in a good way, totally different than an active shooter, are we ready for a good fight? Are we ready for a little bit of a fight? Are we ready to be told your God doesn't exist? Are you ready to be told those are just old stories? Those are just stories that they have no implication in today's world. Yet Solomon mentioned it earlier, said it clearly, nothing's changed. For every scenario you are facing, you're going to find that there's a biblical story that can give you inspiration. Going back to what I talked about earlier, just about, you know, about there's a lot of unfair things, and there's a lot of in the world from the very beginning that there has been a lot of people that are that struggle. What about Joseph? What about the story of Joseph? His brother sold him into slavery. All because he was his father, not all because, an element of that was because he was his father's favorite. Sold him into slavery. Now I'm off lesson. You know the two things in both those stories? In the end, God wins. Doesn't he always win? Ahab ends up like a dog, right? His blood was licked up in the same place by dogs. God always wins. God always wins. Run, hide, or fight. But in the end, God will absolutely win. Recently, at work, I'm going to tell you a story that even my home church knows a little bit about this. You know, recently, it's not a big deal. It's really not. And I kind of overreacted in my own life. But at work, and with a medical diagnosis that was not cancer, okay? It's something simple that exercise and eating right will cure, but I'm like, oh, it's the end of the world. I can't eat right. I'm from Louisiana. Okay. And then at work, I had some news that I'll be traveling. I don't want to travel on this thing. It's going to be gone for 120 days. Again, not a big deal. Don't walk out of here thinking, wow, you know, fine. But here's the point. I was kind of feeling a little rough about it, and I said, you know, God, if you want me to go, I don't know that he wants me to go, but if I go, Heavenly Father, I'll serve you. Maybe I go to a Church of Christ and I can't remember where I'm going. Where am I going? Gee whiz, Quantico. For 120 days. Sundays and Wednesdays, maybe I'll have an opportunity to serve you there. The very next day, you know what I did? After giving it to Christ, it didn't even take me until the next morning. The next morning, I go to work after giving something to Christ and say, you know what, Lord, it's fine with me. Yeah, I don't really want to, but that don't matter. Ooh, y'all. Drew Brees just scored a touchdown. I got 6 more points. I'm kidding. At the very next morning, you know what I did? I went into my boss's office and I said, "Boss, I don't want to go." And he said, "Yeah, I know, Tim. I think that's pretty clear when you cried when you was in my office. I think that's pretty clear. How many times do we give something to Christ and then the very next day take it back? Did I not have enough faith? I just talked with God the night before and I said, God, you want me to go? I'll go. I'll go with a good attitude. Find me a church. Maybe I can speak. Maybe I'll have an opportunity to serve you somewhere else. You know, ironically, my wife wasn't all that upset about me leaving either. But maybe I can serve him someplace else. But then my point is this. The very next day, I went and I took it back. I wonder how many of us do that. I'm telling you that to tell you this. We're about to sing a song of invitation. And if that's something that you want to give to Christ, if that's something that you are ready to get off of your mind and get off of your back and feel good about, my goodness, when I gave it to Christ, I felt good about it. That was the best sleep I had in probably a week over this thing. That's not a big deal to begin with. So as we stand and as we sing, if there is something that you feel like you're ready to give to Christ, please come forward as we sing, and then have the courage that your brother Tim didn't have, and leave it there. And I really thank you for your time tonight. Have thine affection been